Bore da. Good morning, everybody. Buenos dias. Welcome to this discussion, which all of us would probably rather not have, but is one that we find ourselves having to address in many places all over the EU and the world, and least of all in the UK. Let me just quickly introduce who we've got here. I'm Elin Edhaf. I'm the head of Wales Arts International and one of the founders of the Horizons Partnership, which was created for WOMEX in Cardiff in 2013 as a way of bringing together the music sectors from all the constituent nations and regions of the UK. And we've been working together ever since. So we're England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales. And we do believe that united we are strong. And when we were preparing for WOMEX this year, it wasn't an easy idea to put on the agenda that we should be having this discussion. However, I think we all felt that, particularly because our sector are very much pro-remaining in the European Union, nonetheless, we found ourselves in a position where we have to deal with the reality of what the UK voted for. We will come to the diverse responses to that vote within the UK, I'm sure, during the course of the discussion. But just to give you one statistic, which I think is important, within the creative industries at large, the Creative Industries Federation say that 96% of the sector voted to remain. So it's a pro-European Union, a pro-open, and that's exactly what we wanted to portray from the Horizons Partnership, which is our horizons are wide open. We are open as the UK, we are open as constituent parts of the UK, and we are very much open as a music industry. So that should frame where we come from in holding this discussion. We're going to try and have at least 15 minutes open discussion. But we framed this discussion in two parts. And before I get to them, I will introduce this distinguished panel we have. Over to my right, David Jones, who most of you will know from Sirius. To my right, Simon Dutt from the European Music Council, who we're really grateful to have here, who's going to ensure that our conversation is wider than just the internal. And to my left, the wonderful Lisa Whittock from Active Events, who organised Showcase Scotland, amongst a lot of other activities. So all of the panel have very much been involved in transnational artist mobility and working within the sector. There's all sorts of things I could say about the discussion that we're having here. But I think what we're going to do today is focus on two parts. So the first part I'm going to ask the panel to look at is the immediate impact and the concerns that they have for the music industry and their organisation, and not just in the UK, within a wider European context as well. We'll come to the long-term challenges as the second part. So, David, can I start with you?
Hello, everybody. I'm going to talk fairly quickly because I'd like to hear as much back in terms of questions. I think one of the things that is very important to say to our colleagues in Europe, both the people in this room and the people who aren't in this room beyond, is the huge difference between the EU and Europe. I think that's something which, for me personally, Brexit was a huge shock, that decision to go that route. But it doesn't represent everything about Britain. You know, we are not defined by the EU. Our practice in this room is not defined by what happens inside the EU. And there is a wider spirit of connection to Europe, which is very important to foster. I don't think any of us in this room have ever allowed ourselves to be defined by politicians and political structures, and in many ways we work to subvert them, and that shouldn't change. You know, we should still be valuing those connections, and I think that's one of the very few positive things that I can find that's come out of Brexit. In terms of immediate responses, which is what you've asked me to talk about, I think there have been a series of rather apocalyptic pronunciations. And I think, actually, there is going to be huge damage, but that damage is going to be down the line. It's not going to be now. It's not going to be when Brexit is declared, and it's probably not even going to be when Britain leaves the when the UK leaves the EU. It's going to come later, and it's going to come to people's spirit rather than to very clear economic measures. There may be those as well, and we shouldn't discount them. But in the short term, the changes that we are seeing are about the danger, I think, of the UK becoming an even more insular place than it is already. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Britain went into Europe, and I think there's been a fundamental problem that's never been tackled either by the UK or by Europe, which is that there's never been a sort of intellectual basis for Britain being inside the EU. It's been framed in Britain either as short-term financial advantage or the sense that that somehow our sovereignty is being transgressed and therefore we should leave. And I don't think Europe has ever been presented. I was travelling around the country a lot in the run-up to the referendum, and it was noticeable how every time you went outside the major cities, there was a very passionate argument why we should leave the EU, rooted on things which were kind of rather primal. There wasn't an equivalent argument from the Remain camp that was argued through and thought through. And so I think what's happening now is that we are in Britain having to think about everything. And again, perhaps a positive thing that's come out of what's happened is that we're having to think much more. Why do we do what we do? What does it mean? What are the connections? We can use words connecting communities, placemaking. They're the kind of vogue jargon words that every organisation seeking public funding goes for. But they have to mean something now. You can't just ride on a sort of assumed view that says, well, in Britain we all broadly believe and things are becoming more liberal. It's clear that they're not, and it's clear that we have an issue to address, which we've kind of sat and pontificated about in countries like Hungary, and we've seen that dilemma going on in other EU countries. But now, in Britain, we're going to have to face that, and as people working with artists, we're going to have to work really hard to change our practice and change the way that we express things. And I think that then reaches outwards into Europe. Those are things that we're going to have to talk about. So one specific I just wanted to mention, because I've heard lots of people talking about how it's going to be so hard to travel and so difficult for artists. I mean, frankly, Britain's already made it difficult for artists. You know, the visa regime in Britain is one of the most onerous in the world. It's very hard for people outside the EU to come into Britain from visa countries. I personally don't think that very much is going to change. It's not very hard for Americans to come to Britain, and I can't imagine that whatever the political outcome in a couple of years' time, that we're going to end up with something that's more difficult than that. So, again, I don't feel it's about short-term things that are suddenly going to crumble and suddenly going to change. It's about the long-term eroding of values that we have to concentrate most.
Thank you, David. Plenty to think about. Before I come to Lisa, I'd just like to add that in this context, in the European context, what we've discovered in Wales, which did vote to leave, much to everyone's horror, and has been probably the part of the UK which has received most European funding, we have certainly been taking the EU for granted as a sort of a catch-all structure, which has allowed us to be comfortable with our multiple identities. That's been put to question just now, I suspect. But also, there's nowhere that the differences between how people see and vote and have been voting culturally, socially, economically, whatever the basis have been, than in Scotland. So I'm going to come over to Lisa and ask you, what are the immediate impacts and concerns from your perspective?
I'm not going to say too much because I think David's covered a lot, but I do want to kind of like paint the landscape of what has happened in Scotland. Scotland, as a nation, universally voted to remain in the EU, and that politically is of significance. I mean, culturally, socially, and politically, Scotland is a very different makeup from the rest of the UK. My main concerns in short term are to relay that message. Scotland is very much a welcoming place. We welcome people to come and perform in our nation. We welcome people to come and live in our nation. It's a very welcoming place and it is open for business. Politically, there is a difficulty in that the Scottish Parliament did table a draft motion for another referendum on independence, and it is my view that that referendum will take place. Who knows what the outcome is going to be? And that's not a particularly, no matter what your political persuasions are, whether you believe in independence for Scotland or you don't, it's not a particularly brilliant scenario to have the UK leaving Europe and suddenly Scotland talking about leaving the UK and wanting to remain in Europe, because I know that that causes uncertainty to the wider world, and people are looking at us and going, what is happening? I think the point is that, as David quite rightly said, in terms of music and culture, that is a common language. And our sector did not vote, whether you're in Wales or in England or in Ireland or in Northern Ireland or Scotland, our culture did not vote to leave, our sector did not vote to leave Europe. And I think that is incredibly important, and it's about building bridges and looking at ways that we can work together as a music industry and a sector. But so in the short term, I think that the key message has to be, let's look at ways that we can continue to work together in a way that's going to benefit our musicians and our cultural sector.
Thank you, Lisa. For your information, the Arts Council of England, Arts Council of Wales and Creative Scotland have all undertaken surveys on the impact of the referendum on the sector specifically, and I can share some of those thoughts and also where you can find the details with you if you're so interested. One of the key things that's come out of it, or two I will mention over and above everything else, is first a concern around the impact on freedom of movement. I think that has been the number one issue that everyone's concerned about. And secondly is the perception of, picking up on what you were saying about, we believe that we're an open society and we want to welcome people to come and work, and probably more so now than ever. However, there is a perception fear that others from outside the UK might not see us in those light, in that light anymore, which brings us to our European representative, Simone. What are the immediate impact that you can see?
Well, I exactly wanted to actually go and talk about the perception, because I think from a European level, looking outside to the UK, UK has always been, at least maybe until 2 years ago, a country where you thought, like, well, this is a great nation, this is a great country where people are living together, you have a colonial past, and you have a multicultural society in a positive sense, where, for example, especially with music projects, you look at great examples how music, you know, brings people together from the different cultural backgrounds. And so to see that society change to a more xenophobic one, at least that's, you know, what is being conveyed, a big message that's being conveyed through Brexit. And you have increasingly reports on, you know, attacks on foreigners or attacks on people speaking Polish in the streets. And that is quite a shock. And that's really making a very negative perception to the UK, where it has been, for me, for a long time, been very an open society, being open to foreigners. And that's really something I think that is a direct and immediate impact, which is not so much, you know, in very concrete terms of, okay, are there any mobility issues? No, but it's a kind of, yeah, how the image or how the people look at the UK. And you can see it in very concrete terms when people are starting to leave the UK. We were just checking out again the name of the director of the Victoria and Albert Museum, Martin Roth, to leave his post as giving as a reason the Brexit. And I think there are, and I know of other people who said, well, I don't want to live in the UK in such an atmosphere anymore. And I think that is really, that is an impact, I think, especially that is also well, threatening. I don't know if it's already damaging, but threatening, I think, for the music sector, because I think it's living from people coming together, being together, exchanging, and having a lot of people from a lot of different cultural backgrounds present in the UK. If they now start to think, well, I'd rather leave than live in such a... I mean, okay, this is a little bit black, but I mean, there are these tendencies and there are these perceptions from, I say, the outside. And so I think a little bit like a reaction to David, I think, of course, I also don't know, and I don't think that the direct impact will be so negative or quickly, you know, when it comes to mobility. But then when we think ahead a little bit in the timeline, of course, there's also the question of willingness of the EU and the other countries. Do they really want to, you know, keep up, you know, having the open trade, having open borders, you know, from the EU with the UK? Or is this just a kind of reaction to be, well, now we're fed up. You know, we have had the UK for a long time being always complicated when it came to the EU, always having an exception. Now, okay, now you voted for leave, but now live with it. And, I mean, you know, we don't know, but, you know, this is something really where there is a sensitivity and a political issue where down the road it will be interesting to see how much, you know, I mean, you can be not in the EU and take part in all the programs. You know, you can be part of the EFTA and everything, and it will not then have a negative impact. But the problem here is, I think, will there be a willingness, or will there be rather the sense of, well, actually, now they will also have to have some consequences, and they cannot have it all, leave and have, you know, the benefits of the open market, etc. So I think yes and no, you know, we'll have to see if, I think, you know, it will be in the future, if in 2 years' time, when we're a little bit more in the concrete negotiations, if then people are willing to say, okay, look, anyway, we want to continue, we want to be in touch, like the EU side, you know, with the UK, and we want to have that exchange and contact, and then we're happy to, you know, continue trade agreements as they have been with the EU as such. So, well, you know, it's we don't know, you know, what will happen, but I think these are things that I can see as immediate and a little bit more long-term impact from an outside perspective.
Thank you. There are so many aspects that we just simply can't cover in 45 minutes, and I would like to pick up on each and every one of these, and I'm no doubt there'll be questions and comments from the floor. If there was a silver lining, and heaven knows if there is one at all, what we've discovered from a Welsh perspective is that in the last work programme of government before this one, we've got a Labour-led government in Wales. The word world appeared once in the entire document. In this one that they've just established 3 weeks ago, there are more references to international than there are pages. So there seems to be a shift in consciousness that has been forced by the issue. Whether that constitutes this intellectual discussion that you're talking about, David, which we all feel that maybe we've not had, and there's been an absence of a sort of, especially a sort of an UK-wide intellectual discourse. Maybe there is a shift that we can take advantage of. So the next question is around the long-term challenges and opportunities. Now, I think, you know, they're not obvious. And also, on the back of that, what actions need to be taken and by whom within this sector specifically, so we can get the best out of what is not an ideal situation?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about the whole debate around Brexit is being characterised by big, sweeping statements, mostly designed to attract headlines. And in fact, you referred to something there where you're talking about, you know, hate crimes and that sort of thing. And actually, I don't think that is directly what is happening. I think what is happening is that every crime that has that dimension is being fed back through that kind of debate. It's being seen through that lens. So, yeah, there might have been a fight in a fish and chip queue in any city at any time, and somebody might have died. But now, it's being viewed as something that is a consequence of Brexit. And two things are happening out of that. One is it's provoking a lot of headlines. The second is that it's kind of, I would say at the moment, the Brexiteers have the monopoly on the debate. They have a goal that they've achieved, which is to send Britain down the path of seeking to leave the EU, and they're continually feeding back into that loop. And I think we have to devise ways of discussing the positive aspects of Europe. It's a bit late, Rick, frankly. We've been there 40-odd years, and we've been very complacent about it. You know, it's been something where the historical accident of Britain being an entry point into Europe for the world's dominant power, America, has given us extraordinary prosperity. I'm not a defender of capitalism, but it's given probably the tax base on which Britain's been able to operate, and we've just thrown that away. Mm-hmm. So what Britain's actually for is going to be a question that we have to ask, not again in the next 6 months, but you're going to have to look forward to that. What is it? You know, we don't make anything. What is our position if we're no longer in this kind of casually dominant role in Europe? And to me, I want to talk now really from within Sirius, which is a company based in England and quite crucially based in London, which was overwhelmingly voting to remain, not to leave the EU. But I think we're looking at humility on two levels. One is towards the rest of Europe, because I think Europe has quite wisely decided it doesn't need us. You know, they wanted us, but when you have people who say, I want to go, I want to change everything about the whole structure in order to remain, sometimes it's easier just to say, well, go. Mm. So if we want a relationship with Europe, I think it's going to be up to all the constituent parts of Britain to pursue that. But I think we also need a humility to think about our own practice and challenge it and change it, because I think there was this casual assumption that, you know, the world was basically coming to see things, the British world was coming to see things through a liberal lens, and everyone thought this idea of inclusivity was a wonderful thing. And you might occasionally question it, but actually we have to really look through what the arts we believe in, the music that we believe in, can actually do. You can't just make little statements about it, because that consensus is broken now. And so we're going to have to change. We're going to have to think about things. We're going to have to think about what a relationship is. We have to think how we're working with people. We have to think about how we bind communities together. Because there was a very, very sharp divide when you analyse the voting patterns. Almost every city in England voted, sometimes narrowly, to remain. And the rural areas overwhelmingly voted to leave, including some of the areas that had benefited, like Wales, like Cornwall. Have benefited hugely from EU funding. So if they were turning their back on that, what is it? What positives can you find in that? What things do people actually want? How do you weave a story from this that is compelling enough to talk about the values of inclusivity? Because if we don't get that story right, we'll see things being eroded. Already the academic admissions for next year are hugely down. So people don't want to come and study across Britain in the way that they used to. I think that sort of sense of being an attractor is something that's going to be challenged.
And can I ask you, who should be leading on these discussions, or how can we organise that?
I don't know the answer to that. I think it has to start with people's... I don't think there's going to be one charismatic leader that says, you know, let me articulate this, because you're working against the tide, and and historically it takes time for that way of speaking to emerge. I think it's about people figuring how they're going to change within their organisations, and then I think it's about building networks. I mean, that's what... You know, inside music, I think the EU's had... In England, and certainly in London, has had a minimal impact. You know, we've done three big EU projects. Two of them were quite marginal, and one of them was a disaster. You know, so if that's the impact on Sirius, then the short-term impact is very small. But the networks, the ways of talking and working together are absolutely essential. And leaving the EU doesn't have to mean, it should mean increasing those, doubling, tripling what we do there, not stepping back from them and following that political initiative.
On my way to the Scottish dimension, I'm going to just comment on that, on some of the complexities, though, because in the Welsh context, we found that the Vale of Glamorgan, where I live, which is a rural area, not too far from Cardiff, overwhelmingly voted to remain. And so did Gwynedd and Snowdonia, which are very rural and poverty-ridden. However, the issue of poverty really became a dominant factor in the industrial valleys, post-industrial valleys, if you like, where there were that assumption can really be challenged and challenging. Lisa, long-term impact, long-term challenges and opportunities.
I mean, again, I need to kind of reiterate the difference in Scotland to the rest of the UK, and I know that lots of places in Wales and in England did vote to remain, but in Scotland, everywhere voted to remain in Europe. It is a very, very different landscape. There were no increases in hate crimes in Scotland, not one. I mean, it hasn't happened. So my concern, I think, in the long term is, to be honest, that we don't kind of get, as a nation, as Scotland, doesn't get targeted as being part of the UK that went along in any way whatsoever with leaving the EU, because we didn't. And I think that that's a really personal challenge for people in Scotland, and something that we feel quite passionately about. Having said that, and there is going to be another referendum, whether or not Scotland votes to leave the rest of the UK, which I think is likely, the point is that collectively that will make no difference to me and my business or Showcase Scotland or any of the organisations that are based in Scotland, because we still want to work with every single corner of the British Isles and every single corner of Europe. We still want to have an open dialogue with those nations. So, you know, that's the challenge. I mean, the political landscape and what is going on behind all of this really should not affect the way that we choose to conduct ourselves as human beings and as a music industry. And I think that's really important. I think there are, you know, in the longer term, and one of the questions was, you know, the freedom of movement of people. And we were talking about this last night. I'm a sponsor, for the UK. And I don't think that it really will affect the movement of people too much from Europe into the UK. I mean, a certificate of sponsorship, for those of you that may not know, takes 5 minutes, basically, to do online and costs £10. And, you know, that's the scenario for Canadian nationals and American nationals and Australian nationals, and I don't think that we would get into a situation where visas would be a huge issue for people coming from all corners of Europe. But I think that we need to lobby for that. I think that we need to be, you know, mindful that as organisations we should be stating that. I think that we need to be lobbying our governments as a sector. We need to be lobbying our governments and saying, culturally, music is our common language. And we need to be lobbying them for the freedom of movement of musicians. I think that's critical, and I'm sure that's something that you'll come on to talk about. And I think there are ways that we can do that. We all have government agencies. I know that we're particularly close to Creative Scotland and our Scottish government and our sector are talking about lobbying for that freedom of movement. I mean, you know, and I think that needs to be done by us to our government agencies. I don't want to talk too much, because I'm actually quite keen to get into a dialogue with everyone in the audience.
Yes, the temptation is to comment on everything, and we simply cannot do that. Simone?
Yeah, I will also try to keep short, but I, of course, like to comment to some things. So, of course, the EU is not perfect, and we know that, and there's a lot of good reasons to criticise the EU and how funding, public funding from the EU works or not. But, you know, talking about the long term, there's some interesting development on the EU level at the moment. That's they are actually talking about creating a funding program for the music sector, the music industries as such. And that would be something similar like the media program. As you might know, the media is for the cinemas and for European film repertoire, and they are exactly talking about installing such a program for the music sector. We don't know, again, along the line, would it then be possible for the UK to be part of that, when I understand, and I completely understand, that some other culture programs from the EU funding scheme might be not so much worth applying for, especially when you're a bigger company. So that is something we will have to see in the negotiations in the long run, if that will be then open to the UK or not. On another note, not on talking on EU level, but on a European level, of course, there are a lot of European and international NGOs in the music field or in the culture sector that will always remain open. That's also very clear, I think, you know. Be it European Music Council, International Music Council, or IETM, I'm sure, you know, we are not European Union. So I think these contacts, they will remain. I think that's very clear, and there will not be any change. Another comment that I wanted to make was this talk about the media. You know, of course, you know, this is I think a challenge that we always have. Media is really so much inclined to always talk about the scandals, the negative things that happen, and it's so difficult to make media also report about the positive things. And I mean, it might be a quite harsh comparison, but some years ago we've been to Israel and we have seen great projects, you know, between Israel and Palestine on the music level, and it's just never been really reported off. You know, it's the people love more the crisis, more the... So this is something where it's really important, if we have a chance to really more go into also present positive messages. Just a thought. And then I was thinking, you know, I think the key message is we want to stay open from this panel. And I was thinking, maybe it's a question from me to the panelists, and maybe even also to Lisa. Could the music sector, you know, really start a kind of pro-European movement, so it can be pro-European, does not immediately mean to be pro-European Union, but not, you know, only focusing on Scotland, but focusing on the whole of the UK and saying, look, we are really for Europe, we want to continue our exchange, and, you know, we will all get together and back that thing up, because I think, you know, it's really important, as at least how I would see it, that I don't see so much pro-European voices actually, you know, at least, you know, being heard at the moment coming from the UK. And it would be really interesting to see if, you know, someone would really stand up and say, like, yeah, look, yes, we are, we want to.
That question is going out to the audience, okay, rather good, than to the panel, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
If we could have the microphone, and if anyone has got a burning issue, but also want to pick up on this, how can we establish a pro-European movement or within the music industry? But also, you know, what is the role for a partnership like Horizons at WOMEX? How should we be coming together at WOMEX? Because this is a unique opportunity that we have, not only with European and international friends and partners, but also with each other. We don't get together like this anywhere else. So, is there anyone from the floor who'd like to either comment on this question or who'd actually like to bring up your own question or a comment that you do not feel that we've either covered? Because there will be plenty.
I'm Alan Morrison, Head of Music at Creative Scotland. Directly picking up from Simone, the Brexit vote was so close. It was 48-52, and yet it has been seen in the UK to legitimise a rise in xenophobic language and outright racism. The realisation of that and the pound crashing and everything else that's been happening since, I think if the vote happened today, we would vote to remain, that people would have turned around their expectations. So the sense is that when the people who voted to remain are being told at the moment, obey the will of the people, that's not true anymore. The will of the people would be to remain, and we're being pulled out of Europe by minority. So who's going to oppose that? It's probably not going to be the politicians. It has to be the musicians. It has to be the performers. It has to be the artists. And therefore, it has to be the funding bodies as well, and the organisations, so that that's where the pro-European voice comes from. Maybe we need to address this as a moral question and not hide behind any bureaucracy and proactively try to engage with international activity and collaborations, not necessarily to talk to the constituency who voted to remain, but to talk to the constituency who voted to leave and show that international collaborations enrich our culture. They don't diminish or weaken or dilute our culture. That it is about enriching our culture. So we need to reach out to European partners who will work with us, and we need to decide that we are going to proactively support that type of work. And I would like to see, maybe through Horizons, that is one way that all the different parts of the UK, not just Scotland, where clearly we voted in one different way, but all the people who in the cities in England feel very isolated now because of the rest of England, that we can work together in a kind of artistic solidarity, and that would be the way to challenge what's happening.
Thank you. A good recommendation. Who else would you like to come in? Ian. Now, come on, the rest of the UK and the rest of the world. We can't just have Scotland speaking, although I'm personally very proud of how you voted up there.
Well, Ian Smith, I'm now chair of the board of the European Music Council, and for once you'll not hear me only speaking about Scotland, which is probably a relief to most people in this room. But I would, following on what Alan has said and what Simona has just said, we are an organisation based in Germany with support from the Creative Europe organisation within the European Commission, with support from the federal German government and from the city of Bonn where we are based. So we're very much a European organisation. But I'd like to highlight, again following on what Alan said about the position of policy, but European policy and the dimension of European policy is very, very important. Because we need to be close to the power brokers. And the power brokers are not in the UK. They're in Brussels and other places around Europe, whether we like it or not. And the view from Brussels, where we were last week, and if you think it's difficult to get money from any of the UK arts councils, you should try getting money out of Brussels. It's an incredibly bureaucratic process. But there is a move from Brussels to look at music in a special way. Film and media got in there 30 years ago, which David is very well aware of. And the music lobby finally has woken up and is being consulted within the European dimension. Not the EU, but the European dimension. And I think this is a very important area because it is only just that consultation process has really just recently started and is ongoing. A report was made from initial consultation, which we were part of, at MIDEM earlier this year in May, and that process will continue. So what I would argue for from the united voice of WOMIX, if you will, is that we influence that policy and make sure that Europe is a culturally rich place to be and to work. And let's never forget that A, we are all of us in this room immigrants, and equally the richness of cultural variety and diversity which people who come into Europe bring, whatever their land and country of origin, is what makes Europe such a great place to be, to have creative and artistic freedom, and that is something that is so important to protect and develop.
Absolutely, absolutely. Any other views from the floor? Yes, Vanessa.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Reed, Director of PRS for Music Foundation. Just a few thoughts, really. I think the big failure with the Brexit vote, as David has hinted at and also Alan has mentioned, is that the people who are really pro-Europe have failed to articulate why. So for me, that is the thing that Horizons, the artists in this room, anyone working in culture needs to tackle head on and find a way of actually, you know, bringing that to some of those audiences that Alan was mentioning, who are kind of potentially disconnected to our very connected world in music. So I think that's the thing we need to address. And for me, the only example that I can see that is even vaguely working with that is actually the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. When I've met colleagues in Europe, in Estonia recently, for them, he is the beacon of hope still about the UK because he's a Muslim mayor. He has been very, very clear about London being open. There are lots of social media campaigns running with high-profile artists backing his position. And I think we need more of that in different parts of the UK, led by different charismatic leaders and organisations.
Thank you, Vanessa. Right, we have 4 minutes left. If there's no one else from the floor who wants to come in, I'm going to come back to the panel for just one final remark on how we can specifically progress as an open culture that's working together, looking outside, but also bringing the outside in. One final comment on how we can turn this minefield into an opportunity that will help us to get to where we want to get.
So this is how we sort Brexit, right?
I'm going to go that way now.
It's such a huge question. I think networks and continuing dialogue like this, whether that's through Horizons or whatever avenue, is something that we absolutely have to do, because it is about saying we're open for business, but it's also about realistically recognising, like, how, and I'm an agent, you know, and I do so many artists that work from Europe, and that's going to have impact. So it works both ways, to dialogue and lobbying.
Thank you.
I won't.
Simon.
Oh. Sorry, I was going to say something else. I won't deny most of my working life has been doing things I want to do, the people I want to do, the audiences we reach out to, the artists we work with. In the face of adversity, you know, there hasn't been a nice, easy structure that you can just drop into and make things work. And I must confess to a certain thrill that it's going to be difficult, that we're actually going to have to sharpen our ideas on things that aren't easy. Because I think people almost imperceptibly sink into a sense in which you can go, you know, there's this resource, there's this possibility, it keeps us all very busy, and we feel virtuous for doing these things and making a level of success out of what we do. I hope that challenge is going to sharpen our practice and make us more focused about what we do. It's what we're trying to do within Sirius, because frankly we've never talked so much about it as we have this summer, about what's actually going on and why we do it and what it's for. You can no longer just assume that there's that consensus that supports what you do. And I think some of the richest things that have happened in Britain have happened because, not because somebody has willed them to be so top down, but because somebody's cared passionately and wanted to make them. And I think, you know, Vanessa said something very important. You know, inside London, there is a sense of, a bit like in Scotland, I suspect, you know, there's a sense of, like, this is not at all what we wanted, but how do we express this in a positive way rather than just implying that everybody who voted to leave is a moron and should be discounted? How do you actually think about those ideas and engage with those ideas and then work with them?
Simone, very briefly.
I'll try, but I just need to get some understanding. So I think it's really important to have the allies. And so was it the Mayor of London who is?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, then you have a good ally. And to demonstrate the openness from your sector, to be willing to still continue to exchange, I think that's important. But I find, because it's a political question, then that's why I think it's important to find political allies and also to identify those politicians that will dare to speak up for Europe, because they're, I think, from my outsider's perspective, so few. Yeah. So that would be it, yeah.
I echo what has been said, and will add, you know, maybe we have all been talking about this a little bit too late. Our government in Wales is very much pro-European to the extent that they refuse to use the word Brexit because it's
they believe it's clouding people's opinion of what's going on. That's another discussion. What I'm hearing from this in terms of taking back to the Horizons partners is that we will look at opportunities where we can work together differently internally and within the UK, but very much in an European international context. How we can lobby our governments, both on an UK and devolved and regional city level as well, and how we can spot the individual opportunities to take this conversation forward, a suggestion by Lisa possibly that we could have a follow-up meet discussion at Showcase Scotland, certainly maybe come back to this discussion this time next year, but more than anything, how we as funding bodies can help to invest in strengthening our presence in NGOs, in networking opportunities and organisations, and how we also take those opportunities and the multicultural ethos of how we work to communities within the UK where maybe have not felt the benefits of it. There's a lot of work we need to do. Please don't expect us to do all of this. This involves you too. So on that note, if you'd all like to come outside and have a coffee, then we can carry on with the discussion. But thank you very much for coming. Muchas gracias, diolch.